Shalom, everyone, and welcome to the next edition of Congregation Beth Am's Parasha podcast. I am Rabbi David Kornberg, and my partner, Rabbi Matthew Earn, is away in Israel this week with our 11th and 12th graders. I'm very jealous, but it gives me the opportunity of bringing in a guest host today, and I'm very excited to welcome Rabbi Ralph Dallin, Jewish Community Chaplain for the Jewish Federation of San Diego. And as we look at Parashat Vayechi, it makes a lot of sense to me, Rabbi Dallin, for why you are here today as a Jewish community chaplain, because we're looking at the end of the story of Genesis, at the end of the life of Jacob, and it's really one of the first times that our Torah gives us some indication on how we as Jews should approach this. So share maybe a little bit of your thoughts and what you've seen as community chaplain.
Well, Rabbi Kornberg, first of all, thank you for inviting me to join you. And yes, this Parsha resonates with me, both personally and professionally. Professionally, what strikes me, and often I use this when I'm training individuals and teams of healthcare professionals, is that this part of Bereshit, of Genesis, models an important approach to end-of-life care. We're taught that Jacob is the first of our patriarchs who knows in advance that he's going to die. And therefore he takes advantage of that understanding to get his affairs in order. He makes his final arrangements known. Do not bury me in Egypt. Take me up and bury me in the land of Israel, in the cave of Machpelah. And it also gives him an opportunity to call his children around and to deliver an end-of-life message, an end-of-life blessing that can allow him to conclude his life in peace. And that's a model of end-of-life preparation that I think is relevant to everyone, be they Jewish or non-Jewish.
Yeah, it's interesting. One of the things that I noticed about this and I really liked is in the beginning of chapter 48, we actually have Joseph being told that his father was ill, and he's the one who also says, it's not only me that has to go, but it's the next generation. And he brings his children there to be able to perhaps say goodbye, to be able to receive a blessing, that this is not just a single generation, but this is really a multi-generation moment as someone's life is coming to a close.
And that seeing multiple generations is a way that gives Jacob a sense of peace, that he sees the continuity in his family. He has the last bit of nachas, of pleasure, of pride in seeing his children have children, and that sense of continuity and that sense of, in a sense, immortality through his family that also becomes a sense of comfort to him as he approaches the end of life.
So this particular parsha, as I look at it, it talks a little bit about promises that we make and messages that we give, right? Depending on which side of this conversation we're on, right? There are promises that Joseph makes to his father, as you mentioned before, in terms of burying him in the land of Israel. That was something that was so important to Jacob. And it didn't matter how difficult it may be. I mean, Joseph was still living in Egypt. I imagine this was not an easy sort of thing to think about, and yet doesn't seem like he thinks twice. He wants to fulfill that promise. And then as we move into the Parsha, it's the blessings, it's the messages that Jacob has for his children and for his grandchildren in this case as well. Share a little bit as you've sort of spent time with people who are at this moment. What are ways to help make that happen? Because it's not always so easy. It's not so easy. People don't know what to say. People don't know how to start. How do we have that conversation?
Well, I think having the conversation in advance, and for which this Parsha is in a sense a model, is such a blessing on both levels. From the perspective of Jacob, from the perspective of someone who's about to die, knowing that their wishes will be fulfilled is very meaningful. And I work a lot with times with family where maybe They're all living here in San Diego, but their parent who is dying wants to be buried back east or in the Midwest because that's where a deceased spouse is or that's where their parent is. And sometimes that's more difficult. It involves a lot more logistics than having a local burial. But the person who's dying knows that my wishes will be fulfilled. But also it's a gift to the next generation, that whether it's more convenient or less convenient, whatever I'm doing, I know that I'm honoring my parent. And that means they don't have to make choices because all the instructions have been laid out, all the wishes have been laid out. So it makes it easier for them logistically, and it makes it easier from a sense of peace of mind that they're able to fulfill that last wish.
So one of the things that you and I were speaking about a little before we started to record today is the concept of an advanced directive, right? It's something that I know that you work with. When I was working as a hospital chaplain in New Jersey, I spent a lot of time with people on that as well. It's the way that we can express and share our desires so that when we get to a point that we can't say it ourselves, it's actually there and people and our children and our grandchildren know what we want. Is there a particular time frame or way that you sort of recommend people to do advanced directives or to think about advanced directives?
I actually think that every adult should have an advanced care directive and every adult should have a will, because even though obviously it's more frequently relevant for someone of advanced age, we know tragedies are always a possibility, auto accidents, etc. And therefore, every adult, and certainly every adult that has a child, should have a will and should have an advanced care directive. What's also important is talking about what one wants, because being able to let one's children, one's adult children, know what your desires are and why is a very helpful part of that process.
It's not always an easy conversation to have, and anyone who's taken my basic Judaism class knows about this particular story, because I talk about advanced directives when we deal with end-of-life issues in my basic Judaism class. But Debbie and I have worked on and have had advanced directives ever since we were married, and you know, it's not a pleasant conversation to have to go through and to have that, to talk about it. But what we do is about every 5 years or so, we'll go out to a really, really nice restaurant and order an excellent bottle of wine. And that's where we'll have our conversation. So that at least we have the opportunity of having a nice meal and a nice bottle of wine. And then we talk about the things that we need to talk about as we go. It works very, very well. Let's talk a little bit more about this parsha, because there's a couple of fundamental Jewish concepts that are here, and I know you want to share a little bit about the idea of Chesed Shel Emet and these concepts. So talk to me a little bit about how you see these connecting to this parsha and what do they mean.
Well, what's very striking is when Jacob is giving his instructions to Joseph, he doesn't just say, "Don't bury me in Egypt," but he introduces that by saying, "V'asita imadi chesed v'emet," act with me, for me, with chesed, acts of loving kindness, and emet, truth. And what does that add? He could have just said, "Joseph, my son, when I die, bury me in Egypt." And that phrase, so Rashi, the greatest of Torah commentators, makes a note and says, where it says chesed v'emet, and he articulates what's come to be an overriding concept in terms of how we relate to the dead, of Chesed Shel Emet. It is the most truthful, the most altruistic, if you will, acts of loving kindness that we can do for another person, because there's no expectation of reciprocity because the person has already died. And so it is the perhaps purest form of Chesed in how we deal with those who have died, in the care that we provide for them, from stopping everything we're doing in order to bring them to their final resting place and everything related to that.
So actually, I think there's a lot of what we do that is connected into this, whether it be in the funeral itself. We talk about the kvura, that we do it ourselves. We don't have somebody else do it as a means to show chesed and emet. We have also an organization or a group that is called the Chevra Kedisha, that bases itself on these ideas. The Chevra Kedisha is the group of people that actually prepare a body for burial. And as many people know, Beth Am has. We have our own Chevra Kedisha, so when somebody passes away, we're the ones that go in and we do that. And unfortunately, because of COVID, it's gotten a little bit difficult to bring multiple people in. But now that we're coming out of COVID, our Chevra Kedisha is back active again and is starting to do what they do to make sure that this process is done with love, it's done with care, and it's done with respect for that person. There's a lot of different ways. For me, chesed ve'emet very often is translated as to respect. How do we respect this person? We respect their memory, respect who they were, and continue to show that respect even now that they're passed away.
And, you know, related to this is, and one of the perhaps more contemporary manifestations of the need to do things in advance is that burial today is much more expensive than it ever was before. Right? So in earlier times, one did it, the Jewish community had its own burial plot. There was no charge. It was sort of included in part of being part of the Jewish community. Today, it is an expense, and one that can be almost a bit of a shock for family members if they're not aware of it. So that one thing that adults, if one expects to live the rest of one's life in the community, so if you're living in San Diego and you expect to live the rest of your life in San Diego, buying a burial plot in advance, and it could be done in installments and what have you, sets everything up so that when the time comes, not only does family know what you want and where the burial is going to be, but in fact, they're not burdened by a huge financial bill. And similarly, one can make arrangements with the funeral home, with Israel Mortuary, which is our only Jewish funeral home here in San Diego.
It's the one we at Beth Am use exclusively, yeah.
And again, money can be put aside so that it is something that's not a financial burden at the end of life.
And even saying all of that, however, it can still be a financial burden. And so what happens if people really just don't have the ability to pay for all of this?
So because of that, and because of the reality of that, a number of years ago, the Jewish Federation established our Jewish Indigent Burial Fund. And that is a fund that's set aside so that no one should be deprived of a traditional burial simply because they do not have the means. So if someone dies without means, ultimately it's the responsibility of family. But if there is no family or the family is indigent, then they will turn to the Jewish Federation and the Federation will arrange for an appropriate burial.
That's amazing to know. And I know most rabbis know about this, but the reality is there are a lot of people who out there who aren't necessarily connected to a synagogue, and it's very important for them to know that this is something that the Federation is there to help with and provide for. And who should they reach out to if they want to know about more about this?
The best thing is for them to contact Israel Mortuary, since Israel handles all of the burials with the Jewish Burial Fund. And Israel will provide them with the application form, which is the way of beginning the process.
Well, Rabbi Dahlman, thank you so much for being here, for sharing this conversation with me. We actually now come to the end, not only of this conversation, but to the end of our podcast for the book of Bereshit. We say, Chazak, Chazak, Venit Chazek, right? And we look forward to continuing our conversations in the book of Shmot next week. For anyone who's listening and wants to hear earlier archived podcasts, you can go to our website, www.betham.com/parashapodcasts, and you can find an archive of all of the Parashah podcasts that we have for this year. Rabbi Dahlman, thank you once again. Shalom, everyone.